It's my game right here. I feel it. I'm telling you, I feel it. I taste it. Sometimes you be legendary right here, boy.
This is First and Pod.
They could not run the ball to save their lives in this game.
Your favorite team through a national lens.
The beauty of this podcast is that we don't gloss over anything. We do every team in every game.
Instant reaction to all the big games all season long.
The NFL never seems to let us down when we need a banger, banger.
Now, here are your hosts, Andrew Filippone, with 8-time Pro Bowl corner and 3-time first-team NFL All-Pro.
Peterson may go all the way. He will. Patrick Peterson wins it.
Patrick Peterson.
All right, welcome in to a new episode of First in Pod, the podcast that breaks down every game every week across all of the places you get your podcasts, all the platforms. Subscribe, rate, review today. His name is Patrick Peterson. My name is Andrew Filippone. We will be joined by our esteemed producer, James Jackson, here. And we'll be talking about Super Bowl 60, better late than never, as we recap everything that went on in that game and turn the page and close the book on the 2025 season and look ahead eventually to the 2026 NFL season. The combine a week away, free agency will be here before you know it and all that jazz. So, James, thank you for joining us. Let's get this party started.
Let's get the party started because they're partying in Seattle. I wonder if they're still partying in Seattle after the Seahawks beat the Patriots in Super Bowl 60. We have a good performance by defenses. We have Kenneth Walker taking home Super Bowl MVP. But I need to hear from Pat and Pony your takes on Super Bowl 60. Pat, we'll start with you. What was your reaction to the Seahawks handedly winning the Super Bowl?
First and foremost, it was just a massacre on the behalf of the Seattle Seahawks on the way they handled the New England Patriots on the defensive side. The defensive line just got after the New England Patriots offensive line. Kenneth Walker was able to run a while. I know he wished he still had that long run at the end of the game that got called back. He would have held the Super Bowl record of rushing yards. He just had a great game. I mean, anytime he touched the ball, it just seemed like it was a big play waiting to happen. Sam Darnold, again, didn't have to do much, but did not make any mistakes in his ball game. Did everything that he needed to do, made the plays that he needed to, picked up key third downs, was pretty much never in harm's way. In the first half, the defense of New England kind of was, you know, harassing Sam for the most part, really getting him off his spot. Rushing throws, not really settled in his feet in the second half, came back and really settled into that ball game and really honed in on his techniques on, you know, delivering the ball the way he needed to versus just having balls just fluttering up there in the air. But all in all, the Seattle Seahawks defense had an outstanding game plan. Devin Witherspoon was outstanding in coverage. He was outstanding in blitz when they had opportunity to send him on blitz. It was just the New England Patriots finally met their match, and they was outmanned in this ball game. You could tell the talent discrepancy in this ball game. New England definitely got there off. I won't necessarily say the grace of God, but they got there off togetherness and everybody doing their job at that given time. And Mike Vrabel did an outstanding job of coaching this group because no one in the world thought that the New England Patriots would have an opportunity of playing in Super Bowl 60. And here they were. They had opportunity to play for the Lombardi Trophy in the biggest game of the year, came up short. And quite frankly, they shot their wad a year early, because if you look at this New England Patriots roster, out of the 22 starters, 11 of those guys were free agents. So therefore, you know that, you know, they put all, not necessarily put all of their eggs in their basket, but half of their team are guys who wasn't on their team before. So therefore, when you have success like this a year early with a bunch of guys you brought in, that tells me that, you know, you kind of hit your stride early on in that progression of turning the season around. So they're going to have a lot of questions and a lot of things to answer for next year, because now, you know, we had a lot of talk about the schedule, the strength of their schedule last year. Now they're going to probably have one of the toughest schedules this year. So it's going to be interesting to see how the New England Patriots rebound from this.
Yeah, it reminded me a lot of this previous Super Bowl, the Chiefs and Eagles, in that the defense up front really, I thought, was the key to victory for the Seahawks. When you have an offensive line that can't block four guys, when it's 5-on-4, 6-on-4, when you've got our tight end or running back chipping, and you still can't block a team's front four, you can't win. And Kansas City, you learned that the hard way and got blown out by the Eagles. And New England had the same thing happen to them against Seattle. Seattle's defensive front was underrated the entire year. Byron Murphy, DeMarcus Lawrence, Leonard Williams, none of those guys are all pros, but they're probably all a tier below that, and they're really, really good. And the Patriots' offensive line woes that were thought to be a problem before the season started really showed up big time throughout the playoffs, and they were lucky to win three playoffs games given their protection problems throughout the whole run. So, I mean, that to me is the thing that is going to be remembered for me, is like, this is how teams lately have won championships. They've loaded up front and they've dominated the line of scrimmage. Seattle trailed in the playoffs combined for only 1:31. That is the lowest amount of time trailing in a playoff run since Washington in 1991. And their point differential in this playoff run was the best we've seen for a season, playoffs and regular season included, since the 1999 Rams. So this really was a dominant team. And they don't have a quarterback that people think of yet as an all-time great. And they have a team that still, I think, to most of America, is pretty anonymous. But if they're able to repeat this again and do this again down the road, then I think people will start to have more appreciation for what they did this year. And they'll look back on this season as one of the great seasons by a team, because all the numbers suggest that the Seahawks were awesome this year. It's just, I think that they don't have the type of celebrity football players that make people think of them as one of the all-time great teams.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Well, history shall remember them favorably nonetheless, as Sam Darnold answers a lot of questions. The Seahawks answer a lot of questions, but I need to know who the biggest winners from Super Bowl 60 are. Team, player, personnel, fan base. Pony, who's the biggest winner after last Sunday?
Well, I think one of the obvious answers is Walker, because he's the MVP and now he's a free agent. So he's got a chance immediately to cash in on that. And we've seen that happen before. I think of quarterbacks, though. I mean, Joe Flacco, when he won the Super Bowl in 2012 and was great during that playoff run, he had bet on himself. He had not taken a contract from Baltimore before that. And after he won the Super Bowl, he ended up getting an enormous deal. And that deal ended up actually, I think, hurting the Ravens in the long run. But how do you let a quarterback who goes off like that in the playoffs walk in free agency? They couldn't do it.
Yeah.
So he was a huge monster winner from that Super Bowl team. I mentioned Washington. Mark Rippon did the same thing in 91. He was a free agent, and then he won a Super Bowl, and they had to re-sign him. And that really didn't work out for them either. So it'll be interesting here. You've got Charbonnet, but he's coming off an injury. He didn't play in the championship game or the Super Bowl. And Walker looked great in all three games. He was able to carry the workload exclusively. You see the wiggle. You see the ability to make guys miss. He's, I think, a tremendous running back. So running backs have gotten paid more the last couple off seasons than they had previously. So I want to see what happens to him. Somebody is going to want a piece of that, whether that's the Seahawks or somebody else. I don't think they'll franchise him. I guess they could, because the top salaries of running backs aren't as high as they used to be. But I think he's a huge winner, big winner. I think Darnold is too. I mean, that's kind of a no-brainer one. The fact that he is on his fifth team and wins a Super Bowl and silenced doubters and critics, didn't turn the ball over, and didn't throw an interception. And that was something that people were waiting to see happen. I know I was. When are we going to see Sam Darnold give the ball away? And it looked like New England was waiting for that to happen the whole game. Darnold's going to give us the ball. Darnold's going to make a mistake. And he came close a few times early, but he never did. So those would be the guys off the top of my head who I think are the biggest winners from Super Bowl 60, Pat.
I was gonna say those guys, but I'm gonna go out of left field here. I'm gonna go Mike McDonald. Is the biggest winner. Why? Coming into year two, you know, not making the playoffs last year, coming into year two with Sam Darnold, there was a lot of questions on how is this team gonna be with Sam Darnold coming from Minnesota. We all remember the stories about him seeing ghosts and not finishing the season off on a strong note. And then yet he comes to Seattle. Mike McDonald fully gives him the keys to the offense. Clint Kubiak, those two guys teamed up and they had nothing but great success throughout this year. Now, mind you, it's a lot that goes on to that. You need to have a defense. You got to have great special team play. You have to have a play caller in place that's going to be able to help you become successful and put you in the right position to be successful. So the biggest winner to me is Mike McDonald, because now you think about this as well. This is going to be his third offensive coordinator and his third season. So for him to be able to put together offensive coordinators, go out and find a quarterback that he believed in, that he thought that can get his team to the biggest game of them all, and that they did. And I never forget the interview that he had with his team the beginning of the season. I'm sure every coach says this, but it end up, you know, they end up filming it, getting it on tape, and the world had an opportunity to see it. But he was just telling his team how he could see them preparing for an NFC championship game, you know, at their, you know, having home field advantage in the NFC for the NFC championship game. And look what happened. And those guys end up winning it all. And what a story it is for him to be one of the youngest, if not the youngest head coach to win a Super Bowl. You know, just what a great story for Mike McDonald coming from the Ravens. I know the Ravens definitely wish they had an opportunity to keep him in the building. You know, probably got rid of John Harbaugh a year too late. But that's another story. So the biggest winner to me in this in Super Bowl 60, I have to go with Mike McDonald.
That's interesting you say that, Pat. I heard that speech from, or saw that speech from Mike McDonald too when they reposted it. Question to you, when you said that you think that many coaches say that, have you been in locker rooms before where coaches have said that in preseason, and maybe you in the locker room, you guys have thinking it may not be so believable, but you end up having a better season than you thought? Or is that always kind of just coach speak?
Well, you know, for the most part, it's always coach speak, you know, but when the season starts to roll, and around week 9, week 10, and you see how the season starting to unfold, momentum start to fall your way, you know, things are just clicking the right way. So that's when you kind of have a feel of, all right, this really can be it. But for the most part, at the beginning of the season, there's 32 teams fighting, you know, for that one sticking Lombardi trophy. So if you're not a coach that's preparing your team and getting your team visions on, you know, winning that trophy, you're in the wrong business. So, like I said, for the most part, every coach, you know, start the season off, start, you know, that first meeting off in April about, you know, putting together a plan to, you know, to hoist a championship game at home and eventually get in the Super Bowl game.
Interesting perspective. I always like to hear it from inside the locker room from Pat Peterson. But as we go through the winners of Super Bowl 60, wherever there's winners, there are losers, right? So give me your biggest losers from this past weekend in Super Bowl 60. Pat, we'll start with you.
I keep it short and simple. I believe the New England Patriots offensive line really let them down, all five of them. You know, starting with the left side. At the beginning of the game, they started on the left side with the young guys, with Will Campbell and Jarrett Wilson, and they just went to work on those guys, and they just took their chances. I mean, took their turns. Then they started working on Moses in the second half of the ball game. So they literally was just taking their chances on whoever they wanted to go up against in that ball game. So the New England offensive line really, really struggled in this ball game. You know, gave up 15 sacks going into this ball game, giving up another 6 in the Super Bowl game, leaving them with a whopping 21 sacks in the playoff run. Broke Joe Burrow's record in 2021. And when a quarterback get hit that many times in the playoff run, 9 out of 10, they do not win the big game. And that's a fact. So the biggest loser in this ball game, to me, it has to be the New England Patriots offensive line just because the sheer fact that they was not able to protect Dre May at all. I mean, every single chance that he had an opportunity to drop back and pass, there was somebody in his face. He was uncomfortable, scrambling. And when young guys get hit early and often, the eyes come down and they get happy feet. And that's what we saw in the Super Bowl. So the New England Patriots offensive line definitely let them down in the biggest game of them all.
Yeah, I actually think the biggest losers are guys who weren't even involved in the game. I think the biggest losers from Super Bowl 60 are Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson, because New England got to the Super Bowl and we saw the path that they had to get there, and it was not a hard one. If I'm Josh Allen, watching back, the Super Bowl would have killed me, because I think the Bills would have given the Seahawks a much tougher game. I think he's going to look back on this as probably the year.
So?
You don't think so?
Mm-mm.
Really?
Yeah, because the Bills still couldn't stop the run. I believe they would have had more running yards on the Buffalo Bills.
Well, that part I think is probably true.
Then you just talked about the Seattle Seahawks defensive line. We saw what the Houston Texans did to Josh Allen. We saw what Denver Broncos did to Josh Allen.
Right.
I don't think it would have been a match. I think it probably would have been the same result.
Yeah. Well, I think I think May didn't run the ball as much because of his shoulder injury. No. I think Allen does more of that. I think that the Bills run the ball better than New England does too.
I could definitely see that.
So I think that makes it a more competitive game. Plus, you know, the thing about it is, you know, even if they get to the Super Bowl and lose, when you get to the Super Bowl, that still, I think, gets one of the monkeys off your back. You know, Dan Marino went, never won, but you've got Phillip Rivers who never went at all. And that still, I think, is a differentiating point between quarterbacks. Allen's never advanced past the AFC Championship game. Lamar's never advanced past the AFC Championship game. The point I was going to make about Lamar being a loser was not so much, you know, this year per se, because he was hurt for part of it, but he had Mike McDonald as his defensive coordinator. Yeah. So they had McDonald there. They had the great, you know, dynamic quarterback who was an MVP. You had that combination and you were unable to advance past the championship game. Now we see the guy leave. He gets Sam Darnold and he wins the Super Bowl. I think people would have said before the season started that the Ravens had a better roster than the Seahawks. Now those people obviously ended up being wrong, but the expectation was that Baltimore was not like a one-man team or two-man team. They had a really good 53-man roster. So the fact is, you know, the point being, Sam Darnold wins a Super Bowl this year, and Drake May in year two, ahead of schedule, as you point out, those guys are the quarterbacks in the Super Bowl, and Lamar and Josh Allen still have not gotten to one. I think that's going to be one of the big things we remember from this football season. We're going to look back and say, if those guys don't get to a Super Bowl and win one, this might have been their best chance to do it, and neither team advanced very far. Baltimore missed the playoffs altogether, and the Bills only won one playoff game, and their coach got fired because of it.
Hey, man, point. That's a great point. You know, I can definitely see those two guys being the two biggest losers and watching Super Bowl 60 just because of there was no Patrick Mahomes, and you had a golden opportunity right there in front of you to not necessarily, you know, run the tables, but you had it was a better opportunity for you to go up against unexperienced quarterbacks, you know, and play those guys in games that they never been in, where you have the experience, you know, to have the opportunity to take your team further, and they pretty much dropped the ball. So Josh Allen, for him, you know, we all know that he's an amazing quarterback. He can do it all, but he needs some help, you know, so that's going to be on Brandon Beam and Joe Brady to do a great job of putting a supporting cast around Josh Allen, because he cannot continue being Superman, you know, each and every week, because he just continued putting his body in harm's way. You know, you're getting older, not younger. You know what I mean? So you want to be able to put, you know, as much talent around your talented quarterback and have him take less hits that he have been taking in the past, because again, you are getting older, not younger.
It's a very interesting point you make, Pony. And I'm sure the collection of Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, Joe Burrow are looking at that AFC Championship matchup with a little bit of envy. Like, man, I wish I could get an AFC Championship matchup like that. But we'll move on now to the X Factors, because, Pony, we had a conversation pre-Super Bowl about who we thought were going to be X Factors in this game. And I believe you hit it on the head. I believe you said that Kenneth Walker was going to be featured a lot in this game and be the swing man for the Seahawks. So talk about that. Talk about your X Factor reigning true and why you think that Kenneth Walker was able to have so much success.
Well, I picked him to win the MVP before, and I said to bet him at 9-1. So I felt really good about that. And I started to get nervous during the game that my bet was going to lose out to a special teams guy.
Myers.
and that actually gets me to the X factors from this game. Not only did Seattle have a great defense this year and an offense that really did not have holes in it whenever Darnold was not like screwing up or having self-inflicted wounds, I thought their special teams were a huge factor in this Super Bowl and their run the whole way. Now, Myers doesn't miss a kick in this game. To me, I disagreed with anybody who came out and said that he should have been the MVP because, yes, he made five kicks, but they weren't 50-plus yards, and they really were not high-stress, high-pressure kicks. Somebody might argue, well, every kick in the Super Bowl is a pressure one. Okay, but these weren't bombs. These were not things where, you know, you look at it and say a good NFL kicker might not make this kick. So I thought he scored a lot of points because drive stalled. I did not feel like he was the Seahawks' best player in the game. I honestly thought the punter was better. I thought the punter was unbelievable. I thought the punter was, after Walker and maybe Derek Hall on defense, the most valuable player in the game. If there were three stars like a hockey game, I would have given him one. I thought he was unbelievable. Both distance, pinning teams deep, coffin corner plays, punts that rolled inside the 10 and were downed and forced New England to go with long fields. I thought he was a monster in this game. And then I think the entire playoffs, Rashid Shaheed as a return man, gave Seattle another guy too. James brought up something on the preview podcast, Pat, that I thought was interesting. Seattle's like the only team on kickoffs that doesn't have two guys back there. Shaheed spans the whole width of the field and he goes and gets the ball, and not every team does that. And that's, I don't understand why wouldn't you have 10 blockers and one return man with 10 blockers and one return man versus 9 blockers and 2 return men. They do it. It works. He had a kickoff return for a touchdown. That was an interesting observation that I still haven't gotten clarity from as far as special teams coaches go in the NFL. So I thought the X factor in Super Bowl 60 was the special teams play of the Seahawks.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard not to say the X factor was not the special team just because of all of the points you just said. Myers, you know, hitting those five field goals. Yes, none of them was over 50 yards, but you know, for him to, you know, hit those field goals, those were much needed points because, you know, they needed all 12 of those points in the first half. It was 9-0 in the first half. They needed all 12 of those points in total to give them, you know, that edge and also give them the opportunity to flip the field as well. Because once you got the field goal, you got points on the board, you had opportunity to kick the ball off, and it was pinning them inside the 25 for the most part and giving the New England Patriots the length of the field to drive, and they wasn't able to do that. So, and the punter as well, the way he was punting the ball all night, it was only one punt that I thought that was going to get away, end up getting called back from a block in the back by Marcus Jones. But for the most part, special team play, both kickers, outstanding. Those guys, you know, came to play, you know, in the biggest game of them all. And that's what they did all playoff long. You know, Rashid Shaheed making big returns, Myers and the punter placing teams, you know, inside the 10, making key field goals, and just continuing to give their team momentum and giving teams a long field to work with and playing into their defensive hands. So the X factor to me will have to be both kickers.
Someone alert Pat McAfee. This is a great day for the brand right here. Yes, the kickers, punters, special teams, you know, the third phase of the game. And as games get tighter and get more, you know, kind of get more real, special teams reigns true. All right, gentlemen, I think one of my favorite things to do that kind of doesn't really make sense is way too early predictions. I love to do it because there's no base to it. It's all gut feel. So we're going to do way too early predictions on Super Bowl 61 winners. And our great friends at the FanDuel Sportsbook has provided us with odds for next year's 2027 Super Bowl odds winners. It starts with the Seattle Seahawks at plus 750. And you go to the Los Angeles Rams, who welcome back Matt Stafford at plus 800. Then this is where it gets surprising to me. And this is where FanDuel, you know, to me, has surprising odds. The Baltimore Ravens are third at plus 1,200. The Bills coming at fourth, also at plus 1,200. So the Ravens and Bills are tied. Then you have the Packers at plus 1,300. And the Los Angeles Chargers round out the top six at plus 1,500. So, gentlemen, what do you say? It doesn't have to be one of these teams. Just providing you guys with the odds on FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more. Who does your prediction way too early for Super Bowl 61 winner?
I'm looking at the list right now, and I remember seeing at the beginning of the season, the Seattle Seahawks was a long shot. I believe they started this season at plus 1,600, if I'm not mistaken.
They were longer. They were 60 to 1.
Say it again?
They were 60 to 1. So they were plus 6,000 on FanDuel to start the season.
Wow. That's what it was then. I'm sorry. Plus 6,000. I want to go on another long shot, Pony. And I'm looking at this list right now. Long shots don't look pretty good. I can't go a long shot. But if I had to take a wild guess and put some money on it and want my money to stretch a little bit, I would probably go with the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Wow.
Jacksonville Jaguars right now at plus 2,000. I believe Lim Cohen can get Trevor Lawrence on the year one. We saw a better Trevor Lawrence this year. You're going to get Travis Hunter back. Still don't know what position he's going to play, but he is a dynamic player. Haven't seen much of his dynamic playmaking ability in the NFL just yet, but we know what he is capable of. The defense, what the Jacksonville Jaguars were working with, most of those guys are coming back. I know they're going to have some – they're going to want to address the cornerback issue, the cornerback room for their defense. But for the most part, their team is coming back. They won 13 games this year. They're coming off a lot of success. They're in one of the weakest divisions. I know they have to go up against the Houston Texans. I think they'll be better equipped this year, hopefully. But for a long shot, I like what Trevor Lawrence was doing towards the back end of the season, being much more accurate, hitting his passes, less turnovers, probably play some of his best football in the month of November and December. So I want to see if Liam Cohen can help him build on some of that momentum and some of those things that he had an opportunity to work on and have success in the 2025 season. So for a long shot, I'm going to go with the Jacksonville Jaguars.
All right. I like two NFC teams, and they're both in the same division, and they are long shots. I've got a long shot than a longest shot. My long shot is Dallas at 30 to 1. And they haven't made the Super Bowl since 95. And they've been chronic underachievers. And they never get it done in a big spot. So I know all of that. And I still think they're good value at where they're priced because I don't think they can get any worse defensively. And I do think they can actually get better offensively. Pickens going to come back on the franchise tag. Another year in that offense. Dak Prescott, offensive line, a year healthier. They were not a healthy unit last year. I think that they have a shot to be a top five offense in the NFL. And if their defense is just average, given what's gone on in Philadelphia, I give them a shot to win the division. My long shot, like try to find a team that's going to be either New England or Seattle, is the Giants at plus 7,500. Jackson Dart year two. You've got the names and the pieces on defense. You've got big names. And if they can produce like their names, then you have the makings of what we talked about with Seattle with great front four play. But they've got to play to their ability. Abdul Carter's got to come back and be a lot better. Dexter Lawrence has got to rebound from what was a down year for him. Burns was probably their best defensive player and almost won. Didn't almost win the sack title because Miles Garrett was unbelievable, but was right there in the top five. So you've got that. Plus you've got a quarterback that has a chance to make a big leap with better coaches, and he's going to get Malik Nabers back. So I think the Giants are very, very, very underrated. I love them. I don't, they won't post the win total yet on FanDuel for another couple months. I bet their win total will be around 7.5, 8 games, somewhere in that ballpark. I'm going to hammer them to go over next year. I think they're going to be one of the most improved teams in the NFL in 2026.
Let's see if John Harbaugh can get the big blue turned around.
Let's see. I'm seeing great value down there in Tampa at 50-1.
Oh, I knew it. I knew you were going to say that. I see Atlanta at 50-1 too, James.
Yeah, and we know, and we're, you guys can either take my advice or not, like last year about those Atlanta Falcons, but we'll see.
All right, that was our Super Bowl recap podcast. We'll get into the offseason moves the next time we talk. For James Jackson, Patrick Peterson, thanks to our friends at FanDuel, make every moment more. This is First and Pod.